session number 30134, reel 18.
Okay, so this is Joe Cetri,
reel
17. Yeah.
The company, the flank, was now secure, and that was fairly well. But of course, the Germans replied immediately with a hate program, shelling and mortaring, and caused quite a few casualties. But 51 Dev were progressing in the south, and I think these Germans had been sort of flushed out. But now, of course, they felt that if they stayed there much longer, they would be outflanked by 51 Dev, and they'd be pinched out by us there, so they left, but not without a considerable amount of fighting, sniping, machine gunning, and so on. And now, at this stage, the battalion reverted to its own brigade, 158 Brigade. I've got a note here: vehicle communication disintegrated. Just there. And another comment: wet, soaked. Then all communications, vehicle had to come through 15 Dev Frasselt and down that way. Just couldn't get anything through the wood. Now, I'd like to read something from the book, because it does convey something, and I think it's relevant.
Okay. This is the book you're referring to, Joe.
That's the Regimental History, the Bible.
Yes.
158. Yes. This is the state of the road, not only through the forest, but the detour that had to be taken. 53rd Div axis was hopeless. And this is the quartermaster. I decided to go via Cranenberg again. I got through, but the water was over our mudguards. That's up. I couldn't contact the battalion quarter that day, but found the cooks under Captain Whiteside near Frasselt. Going back to A echelon, no roads could be seen, or even sign of any. It was just like a lake. And the ducks, DWKWS, not the birds.
Yes.
Were being used for wounded and ammunition. We could have got through because I had a pretty good idea where the submerged road was, but our luck was out, and being the driver, ran into one of the jelly slit trenches underwater, and no one could stop to help. The water was up to my thighs, got out, and the ducks kept giving me their wash, but I survived. The transport sergeant and the transport sergeant gave me a lift back into three-tonner, and we managed to get through to Bean, who by that time had given up all hope. But that was a situation.
Yes.
Even the roundabout route.
Yes.
So, right, well, now we've got through up to the end of the 9th of February, and we could call that phase one.
Okay.
That is the taking of the first line of defences and its consolidation, and we're completely in our possession. The end of phase one. 10th of February, that's the next day, a quiet day. Comments: cold, wet. And we got, just get the book again, please.
Yes.
We've got something that warmed us up. Congratulatory message as follows: please convey the 1st East Lancashire Regiment my congratulations on the result of their operation. It is a grand example. Yes, convey to all ranks the commander's congratulations on the resolution with which they overcame all difficulties of weather, ground an enemy to complete the key task of this operation. Stop the division. Anyway, there it is. So
who would that be from, Jeff?
Divisional commander.
Okay.
So anyhow, that sort of cheered us up in our rather. Now came the planning now for the next day's advance. First, 5th Welsh, of our own brigade, moved up on the battalion's left, so it felt a bit secure there. 6th Welsh Fusiliers went back to 160 Brigade. And the plan was made for the next day's advance. And the mission was to advance along Main and secure a bridgehead over the next road system, next main road going through Utah on 26 Main. You find the grid.
Yes, I can see. Yeah. So now you're describing a position here which is central, pretty much, in the forest.
That's right, yes, with 1st, 5th Welsh conforming on their left. Mm. So, that is that. Now, on the 11th of February, that's the next day, 10th having been spent where we were, everybody making themselves as comfortable as possible in the soaking rain. 11th.
Was it impossible to keep dry, John?
It was, completely. Mm. There was no means. No shelter. No.
So you're wet all the time. Your feet were wet. Your whole body was soaked.
Whole body was soaked. It says a lot for the endurance of the soldier, what he went through, in the Arctic Ardennes, and then this difference. And, I mean, we didn't have people going back sick or anything. They didn't. I mean, they weren't sick.
Mm. No, but not only was it wet, but, of course, it's February, so it's cold as well.
I know, cold. Well, yes. Later on you'll find that my remarks are slow rain and snow. Mm. Now, 11th of February, start 0700 hours, still dark. Italian moved off down Kentucky to main axis. Order of march being D, A, B, C with the two tanks. We had encounters with Germans on the way. We were having them the whole time. And D Company was engaged in a lively battle. 30 prisoners of war were taken. And a lot of casualties. And Germans were seen to be making their way back. A Company moved to the right of D as soon as a navigable track could be found. So there were two company front by then. And then there was a further battle by B Company. All these were small battles, but involving platoons, even individuals. As I say, you had, you'll find that the, in this comment by the reporter there, you might be behind one tree and the German behind the next.
Yes.
And it was that sort of battle. Then, further battle by B Company, Utah, Nevada. Now, having got to Utah, Italian position astride Utah with heavy stonking, and that's, you know what stonking means.
Incoming shelling.
Well, yes, a stonk is a concentration of projectiles, be it guns, mortars, or anything else. Mm. Heavy stonking and casualties. Now, with Utah again, keeping one's thing tidy and trying to disentangle one battle from another, which is really a running battle throughout the forest. We call that the end of phase two. So, Kentucky phase one, Utah phase two. Mm-hmm. B Company sent forward a patrol to the trench system here.
Yes, now this is the sort of main second.
That's right,
trench
here
system.
Was Utah.
Yes.
And there was a trench system.
Yes.
D Company sent a patrol to the German system, initially unoccupied. And about midday, commanding officer was summoned to brigade headquarters for orders conference. And the sort of information he got there, which I don't think was fair to be quite true when the entry advanced, was that the Germans appeared to be pulling out the forest, and the thing to do now was to make an all-out dash for Virginia before nightfall on that day.
Right.
That's the final thing.
Now Virginia is the third and road last, across the forest.
And the last one, yes.
Yes.
First, Fifth Welch on the left to conform, but they were still fighting on Utah. But however, Juan Ilanar to press on regardless while the light stood. And this, remember, would have been maybe about two-ish or even more in a February day, and a gloomy day at that. Mm-hmm. To press on regardless. Now, what the CO did was, because the D Company's initiative got into the second trench system, found it initially unmanned, but it soon filled up. CO pushed the rest of the battalion, following on D, make use of that and get into the system before the Germans really gelled and really made it, had to really fight for it.
Yes.
Get it before they really got into it. So a D Company immediately pushed in with tanks to occupy the trench system, followed by the rest of the battalion, D, C, C, B, and A. But the movement, the enemy did move into the trench system in increasing numbers. And because it appears that they'd been taken off balance a bit and didn't expect us to follow quite so quickly or so closely after the initial encounter. And they were now beginning to realize that unless they did something, we'd get the forest and they'd be out, and they were making amends. And that is where this rather contradicts the information the CO got, that they were pulling out. In fact, they were doing just the contrary.
They were coming up from the south, Joe, were they?
From the east.
Sorry, from the east, yes.
Yes. From the east, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Building up. Anyway, the battalion pushed on, D. The CO had two options at the time. One, to really get the battalion consolidate in that area, which would have been rather cozy for the whole battalion, or push on. Well, the disadvantage of that, of consolidating here, would have been to allow the enemy to really build up, and then you'd have a major task.
Mm-hmm.
So to take a chance and get there before he could really organize, and that is what happened. Anyway, what happened was that D Company pushed on and arrived at a clearing. Just a second. Yes, I'll just see if it's clearing I have in mind, because there were two clearings involved in this. Yes. Anyway, that's right, yes. A clearing. And with the enemy, that's clearing of 1,000 yards behind, beyond Utah, where the enemy was quite strongly positioned, not entrenched, but positioned with Spandaus, and there was shelling by the enemy. And they shelled very heavily along Maine at the time.
Yes.
Because that was the route we were coming down anyway.
Yeah.
And they'd observed that. But they'd got the other edge of the wood organized, not all that strong, but they had machine guns and so on, and making the open area a very difficult proposition. But however, Utah, D Company, got across, surprisingly. Mind you, we had tanks as well, that helped. But they got across without too much difficulty. And then the rest of the battalion followed. Mind you, this, you must get the idea that it's pressure now, rush. And you'll find that.
Time.
Yes, and rush against fading light to get to. With the rest of the battalion. But there was violent reaction. D Company because they came to another clearing. And D Company was isolated pretty well. That was still the first clearing. D Company had got to the other edge, as I say, not without too much difficulty. But when the rest of the battalion came in, they found D Company isolated before having got across.
Yes.
And a very violent reaction indeed.
Yes, the position of these clearings, Joe, is just on the sort of eastern edge of the forest,
right,
pretty much, isn't it? Just before a village called Aspidon.
Oh, no, Aspidon was right down here. No,
further to the south. Okay, yes, I was looking at this one.
Ah, yes.
Small village here.
That's right.
Yep.
I just have a look myself. Asperberg.
Asperberg.
Yeah, Aspidon is down here.
Fine.
Well, actually, I don't know what happened, but throughout my peregrination throughout the forest, I never saw a village, I never saw a house.
Right.
Mind you, I do know that these maps do get out of date.
Mm.
Mm. I never saw a village, I never saw a house.
Right.
Just trees. Mm. This place opened up like a hornet's nest. But the smoke program, was made. They couldn't obviously fire on our own because our D Company is already there. But with a smoke program, the rest of the battalion doubled across pretty well and got there with surprisingly few casualties. The enemy fire, surprisingly few casualties. Enemy fire from various directions. From various directions, and one of our tanks was knocked out. And this was about 4:30, and a winter evening about to set in, but still a bit of daylight, 1 hour of daylight left. C Company was now in the lead, and found themselves confronted with another clearing. An opposition in front with mortars, MMGs, anti-tanks, anti-tank guns. And the 1st 5th Welsh could be heard battling on our left. They were also having problems. And also the Germans began infiltrating in trench system in our rear. I mean, the forest being as it is, I mean, you get round people, you get behind people. So the situation was getting rather tricky.
There wasn't another battalion coming through after you, Joe?
Not yet.
Right.
Not yet. They did eventually, but some time afterwards. Light was failing. And a quick plan was made with the artillery and the tanks, that's the C Company, got onto its objective, they were clearing. B Company was on the flank giving support fire. Now, I want to read again, if you give me that, how lots in this fighting, and this is not the only typical, this is very, very typical, it's not just an isolated thing, of the sort of thing that happened in this particular thing. A short time before HR for C Company's attack, a previously unlocated enemy machine gun opened up in a position on the flank from which it would have been able to enfilade the whole company during the assault, wipe it out. Seeing this new danger, CQMS Linton, acting Sergeant Major of C Company, who was near the threatened flank, without any orders, advanced across the open ground in the face of the enemy's fire, assaulted the position, killed three of the crew with his stem. He did this on his own initiative. by his courageous action and presence of mind at such a critical moment, he undoubtedly saved a large number of casualties which otherwise would have been inflicted on the company in subsequent attacks. But this sort of thing was happening the whole time.
Yes.
I'm just quoting at, you know, random. Anyhow, they got there with 30 German dead, estimated, and some prisoners of war, with only two casualties. But had he not taken that initiative on his own, I mean, the tale might have been written differently.
Did he survive that, Joe?
Oh, yes, yes. Okay. Now then, we now come to A Company in the lead. Each company had their turn, and now it was A. We advanced in the lead, and dusk for Virginia, growing dusk, reached the objective, collected on the way some more prisoners of war and a German jeep. And I recollect, down the road, I think it was Maine, but towards my objective, I recollect on that occasion, I had a platoon in front, the platoon down the track. I followed with my little group, and the troop of tanks I had with me, Churchill's, and the other two platoons, now all in close proximity to the tanks. And of course, one thing that you must never do is to allow tanks to ramble on their own in either woods or villages or anything like that, because they're very vulnerable.
A troop of tanks is three, yeah?
Three, yeah. Very vulnerable, because, okay, in open country they can see the stretch and so on, but they're vulnerable to ambush, close tanks, and that sort of thing. And quite suddenly, I heard a bang, a very loud one. And before I knew what happened, I saw a couple of Germans rushing through the wood. They'd been a little bazooka party, which even with this protection that we had, mind you, it was dusk, difficult to see, so you couldn't see them before then. And they had a go at one of the Churchills, but they missed or something, so it didn't. But that is the sort of thing that happened. And that's how vulnerable tanks are.
Yes.
I mean, they are excellent support, naturally. But they have to be protected. And usually the drill is, I mean, in a mixed sort of country, infantry and tanks working together, because you're working as a team. The tanks will shoot you into an objective over open ground, which they can see. And you get onto your objective, wood, village or something. And then it's up to the infantry to clear it, make sure there are no, that it's safe. Then the tanks come up and you repeat the performance. But you never let them wander on their own, unprotected. And there's an example.
Yes.
Remember that. So there we are. Now we reach, we have now, I got onto my little objective. I was to occupy, I was told, a position down forward of the track junction, forward of Virginia, and going at the track junction known as Dead Horse Corner, because there were four dead horses, victim of shelling. So, fortunately, the weather was such, I have a comment here, rain and snow.
Snow as well.
That the smell wasn't what it would have been in Normandy.
Right.
So, Dead Horse Corner, forward of that.
That position, Joe, according to the map, is just on the other side of the
Virginia.
Road known as Virginia, yes.
That's right. Well, now, having reached that thing, we call that the end of Phase 3. Not the end of the day, but the end of Phase 3. Mm. We're still on the 11th. The end of Phase 3. The orders were, dig in. Now, I vaguely knew that the other companies were going to be posted, roughly, but the whole thing was rush, rush, rush. And so we didn't have the chance, you know, to sort of, shall I say, get acquainted. We had to get there and dig in and hold. And, it was a question of two platoons, a very tight defence, two platoons forwards and one back, and dig, dig, dig. Now,
Do you know which platoons were the forward platoons?
I think they're
probably mentioned in the book.
No, it's all right. Give me the book.
Okay, fine.
Because I think it says there. I think. I think I probably have it in my mind. And well, no, it's different, really.
Okay, Joe, so you've just looked in the book and we've established that seven
yes.
and nine were
seven
forward.
And nine were forward, and eight were in rear and counting in a tight ball.
Fine.
Now, what I saw there was a track that was leading then. On the left was a young fir plantation, completely opaque, and to the right, woods. Not quite so opaque, but that was really opaque on the left. And we no sooner started digging down and getting to when a German patrol walked straight up the path, completely oblivious that we were there, and a short, sharp fight developed. Grenade, possibly the bayonet, grenades, machine guns, everything.
It was as close as that, when you say possibly the bayonet, it was as close as that, Joe.
Absolutely, yes. Anyhow, that was a short, it was getting dark, I mean, hard to see what was happening. And there was no artificial moonlight there at that time. And so that was a short, sharp fight. The Germans were obviously completely oblivious. I think there must have been about 20 strong marching straight up. And they got surprised their lives. They did, well, we probably did too. Anyhow, they got quite a few wounded. One of ours was killed, and Sergeant Wilson was wounded, and I think Corporal O'Brien took over and did magnificently. But that was that. And anyhow, we got down digging and digging and digging, and this was, of course, it was dark by then. And we could hear, in the distance, sounds of tracks and Germans shouting and so on. It looks as if there's a build-up. But that is what, that's what I say. I mean, the CO was given the impression the Germans are pulling out, getting out of it. But it looked, well, obviously, they were building up, wanted to get back in again. So that was the picture, now dark. Now, so that was that. Now, we had, of course, the battalion had gone ahead of the rest of the brigade and were there first on their own, astride Virginia.
And you were the forward company?
That's right,
Joe.
We were the nose and had a sense of splendid isolation, and not knowing quite where. Now, our only communication, now again, this was a very tricky period, because we were right forward, having rushed there, on our own, that is, as a battalion. The Germans started infiltrating in the rear. We soon found that casualties couldn't be evacuated beyond the regimental aid post, and also, of course, if this prolonged some time, we couldn't get things through, ammunition, food, anything, resupply. We had the tanks forward with us, so that was a consolation, but we were in a rather sticky position, and behind my company position, Dead Horse Corner, was Italian observation officer, Captain Lester, in communication with the guns, which was a great thing. But one had to go up there personally or send a runner or something if one get in touch with him. The main thing is that, of course, the other thing which I probably omitted in to begin with, communications by wireless, of course, cable gets cut too by the shelling, was extremely difficult in the forest, atmospherics and so on. You couldn't really have a reliable, and also batteries were wearing down. So you had this situation of resupply, evacuating casualties, batteries wearing down, intermittent communications, and a heavy concentration of enemy, and as one could judge, and we were alone. And my sense, I mean, a sense of very, you know, splendid isolation when I did get through, it wasn't in the nature of a complaint, but I, you know, I pointed out, where the hell are the rest of the people? I can't see nobody. And said, well, don't worry. they're closer than you think, and they probably were, but the denseness of the vegetation and the woods, you couldn't see. Now, the Germans started infiltrating through the woods. They are labelled attacks there, but they weren't sort of, you know, bayonet charge attacks. They probably couldn't make money now, not through this dense stuff. But they were infiltrating, and probably trying to build up inside the wood, particularly on the left between, as it happened, C Company was on the left on the diagram. Between us, occasionally we saw a figure or a face, and that was shot at, and also the area raked. I mean, if anywhere there, well, they'd be raked too.
Yes.
If things got too hot, we got on touch with the gunners, and they put down fire, and sometimes the fire was very nearly on top of us, but that didn't matter. We were dug in.